So this week, we're really excited to have Ben join us on the couch. Ben, thank you for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So the reason I had asked you to come in to chat was because I had heard that, you know, obviously you actually led our most recent trip to Cambodia for missions. Mm-hmm. But I also heard that you were kind of into full-time like mission work for a while. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to explore that whole journey with you, mm-hmm. kind of from beginning to end.
For sure.
That sounds good.
Yeah, of course.
So kind of what was your first mission trip, I guess, as somebody that's into missions?
Yeah, my first mission, I guess it was more of a vision trip. It was like a week-long vision trip in East Asia where we just visited a lot of, where we visited one main city and then kind of met a lot of people who were in the city and just kind of hearing their stories, hearing their spiritual journeys as well, and even mingling with other missionaries in the country and just being able to hear how they did missions over there.
Is that something you did through the church or did through an organization?
Yeah, I went through my college ministry called Epic Movement. For those of you who aren't familiar with Epic Movement, it is the Asian American subsidiary of CRU, Campus Crusade for Christ.
Oh.
Yeah, so we had a lot of mix over with CRU and Epic, but that's kind of my medium of how I got into it.
And that was your, did you ever do like youth, mission trips as a youth, or that was kind of like your first entry point into missions?
Yeah, I've always been interested as a youth, but my parents were very hesitant on sending me overseas. Granted, most Asian parents probably are.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, I've always heard stories, but I've never really taken a mission trip until college.
So, and then where did you guys go for that? You said Southeast Asia, or you can't say.
I can't say specifically, but the East Asia region was that. And then my main mission trip was in Southeast Asia.
Okay. Yeah. And then after that, I guess what was something that you felt like inspired by when you went on that trip, and what kind of fueled like a passion for it?
Yeah, I think what really got me going was, I mean, I think the funniest thing was, ever since college, I'd always be like, I would never go on missions. Like, I've always was interested in hearing these stories. But I think like once I actually went on one trip, and hearing the people's stories there, like it was so fascinating because like it was kind of shocking my world in a sense. Like I grew up in the Bay Area, and never really left here, I guess, except for college. So that I've always had the American mentality as well as like hearing other people Asian American stories and American stories, but like when you hear a story from someone in a different country and like even just hearing how they came to know Christ, like their stories are like something like I would never expect kind of thing. And like I'd always hear stories like, you know, especially in that kind of region of the world, like people would be disowned, people would like have a lot of family problems, and just like it's so different than the American stories. And I think like, I think that really just hearing that and just like, it really just broke my heart. And just like praying about it after hearing their stories, like this is like, I think I came to the realization of like how privileged we are here in the States and how like I am privileged to just be able to have a Christian family as well as a Christian community pour into me. Whereas like for them over there, like they don't have the opportunity to hear about Christianity or Jesus or like the love that God has for them. And for some random person to just go over there and just do that, like they that's like a once in like 100-year opportunity for them. Whereas like here in America, it's like almost every day kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And I think like after hearing their stories of like how another missionary came into their country and shared the gospel with them, like I was like, I want to be that person because I had this opportunity here so many times, whereas for them over there, they don't have the opportunity. And I think hearing that really broke my heart and just wanted me to like just share this truth, that gospel that Jesus has shared with me, and sharing that with them as well.
I love that. I know offline we had talked about you just being passionate about connecting with or learning about people's cultures and just people in general. Do you think that desire and that passion came from this trip, or was that somewhere that was like innate within you growing up?
Yeah, I think it was a mix of both. Like in AME growing up, because growing up in the Bay Area, like there's a lot of Asian Americans here. And I was always, as in high school, middle school, like I'd always question like, what, like I'd always see everyone, they look similar to me, but they're not exactly the same as me. And I've always questioned like, why is that? And like after hearing about like, you know, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, like just like immigration stories in general of how people immigrated into America, like I started getting a better understanding of like how people's upbringings like really is rooted, deeply rooted, especially in like our history. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as a middle school and high school student, we are learning about the history as well. So I think it was fascinating to me how those stories kind of connected the dots of like how people's upbringings came up, and like how they act certain ways, and how like they, you know, respond and think certain ways because of like all these history things. And I think that helped me understand as well as a missionary of like, oh, because that has, those wars have a lot of deep roots, especially in America, but they also have deep roots in, you know, the wars those countries happened, as well as neighboring countries. And I think having a better understanding of that helped me as a missionary even like to like kind of relate to them more on a cultural and contextual background as well. So that kind of helped drive me in a sense of like also trying to figure out how to like, not because like my kind of missionary style is not colonialism. Like, I don't want to like shove my ideologies upon them. I want to meet them with where they're at, like same way that Jesus does his ministry, right? Meet them with where they're at, meet them at their feet, and just be able to serve them. And that's kind of how I want to do missions. And that's, and I think in order to do that, I need to be better equipped on like all the context and historical background as well.
That was like such a good, like well-rounded answer with like so many things in it. I love that you know, brought up like, you know, the history that we learn as kids. It's not just history in the past, but it actually does shape like cultures, right? And the mm-hmm. way that people live and think, even up to modern day world today. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that you said that I kind of want to touch on. I guess like one of the things off the bat was you mentioned like what you felt like was like effective mm-hmm. missions work. Mm-hmm. Obviously not colonialism, but what kind of like, from somebody that like cares about missions, that has been on the field, mm-hmm. like what have you seen that you feel like is effective, and what do you feel like is not?
Mm. Yeah, I think what is effective? I think what's really effective is just understanding people's cultural background, and just kind of like, it's just like, it's like, how do I go into, especially with the language barrier, like, how do I go into a country where I don't fully understand their language, and how do I communicate with them? And I know with like some countries, it's like, you got to be able to do a lot of body language stuff. Like the middle finger in America is obviously very bad, but a middle finger in some countries is not very bad. So it's like understanding those kind of interactions, as well as just like even like, like making sure to respect their culture. Because I think like even the clothing we wear and like the way we hold ourselves in countries, like we got to make sure like we are not like crossing or like being on the borderline of like, what is going on there? And just kind of in general, respecting your culture. Because I think like when you start to create like an atmosphere of respect, especially in Asia, when you have that respect for their culture, they kind of will have that respect to like give you their time as well. And I think understanding that is really crucial to how you do ministry as well. Because if you, especially on, you know, just first interactions, like, because if you create a bad first interaction, it's really hard to like continue that onwards, because like they might be turned off. There might be hurt from like past like interactions from like whether they met other Christians before, and that's like, you definitely don't want to dive into that wound. You just want to be able to like slowly create a more relational kind of aspect to it, so that it doesn't feel forced in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I think once you create that aspect of respect, as well as be able to communicate with them, especially with the language barrier, like that's when people will start to open up to you a little bit more as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned that your first mission trip was to Southeast Asia. What were some of your following trips? And were there following trips before you felt like you wanted to go into it a little bit more full time?
Got it. Yeah, sorry. My first mission trip was in East Asia. Some following trips was just a couple other vision trips in East Asia, as well as other countries.
Sorry, is that what they call it these days? They don't call it mission trips anymore. They call it vision trips.
So how missionaries views it. Yeah. Vision trips are more to cater towards gaining vision in a sense of like, this is what the spiritual atmosphere is like. And of course there's different visions for the vision trips, but like the one I went on was more understanding the spiritual atmosphere, as well as just kind of understanding whether this is a mission field that you'd be willing to go into. So like specifically, it might be like people on a team who might be interested in going into full-time ministry. So like that's kind of trip to like help in a sense. And then mission trips are more like long-term in a sense of like not just a 1 week kind of thing, but like maybe a month, 3 months, a year, multiple years or something like that. So that's kind of differentiation between vision and mission trip.
Cool. You taught me something new today.
At least that's the terminology missionaries use from what I know.
Okay, good. Yeah. I want to be like correct. So.
For sure. Yeah. But yeah, going back to the trips I've done. So my mission trip is kind of unique in a sense because COVID did hit. I wasn't actually able to go in country. So most of my time was virtually, unfortunately. I think there's still a cool aspect to it. Like, there's a lot of things I've also learned of like how to newly do missionary stuff, even though I'm virtual as well.
Let's back up really quick. What was that trigger in you that made you feel like I actually... So even to maybe back up further for people, you had decided to commit like a year, right? Mm-hmm. Was it a year? Yeah. To actually go in to Asia and be a missionary, mm-hmm. and support them in that way. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So what was that trigger that made you feel like I'm just going to go for fun on a vision trip to like actually saying yes to devoting like a year?
Got it. Yeah. I think because we had this opportunity to go to East Asia, yeah. And it doesn't usually happen. So I was like, might as well just give it a try. So went on that trip. God broke my heart. And then kind of after like a 3 to 6 month process, I kind of just straight up praying, just asking God, like, where do you want me to go? That was when I kind of made that decision of like, oh, I want to give missionary a chance. Give it a try. And so when I made that decision, had to have a talk with my parents, because as Asian Americans, always got to tell my parents. Right. And at first they were not happy, but after like praying and talking to me about it more, they're like, okay, like they're okay with me doing it. And then after that, decided to do it, applied, and then I actually also became the team leader for that year-long missionary trip. And then that was in December of 2019, and then that was also the time COVID was starting to spread out in China. And then unfortunately, it grew into a big thing, and that's when everything just went downhill. But yeah, that was kind of the process for me.
Okay. Yeah. And then you did this, you had to pivot, you and your team, because you guys were expecting to go out. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of pivot that into that virtual experience that you were telling us about?
Yeah, so I already signed up for a year. So that was kind of my commit date was from June 2020 to 2021. Yeah. And then it was because of everyone was virtual already. We were already kind of already brainstorming. It's like, okay, the likelihood of us going in country is very slim. We're still going to try. We're going to apply every visa we can. We're going to try to use every scapegoat that we can. In the meantime, while we're trying to figure those out, we're just going to try to do everything virtually. So we connected with a lot. We had a team already in country. So we connected with them. We tried to help them with like virtual outreach events because everyone else was also virtual. Mm-hmm. So we try to use that medium of like, since everyone is virtual, let's just take advantage of that. Of course, the time difference was the hardest part too. We created programs like a lot of our initial in-person events were supposed to be like English clubs where we taught English, and then once we teach them the basics, we would teach them like Bible stories, and then if people were interested, like we teach them more of like, oh, what are the meanings behind these Bible stories, and then have those conversations, and then those meetings we did like outreach events, we did online Zoom game calls and whatnot, like we just everything that most people did in America virtually, we kind of just did the same, because I think even for people in America, they were learning how to do things virtually, and we're like, oh, let's, while we're also learning that, we try to like utilize that to make it more friendly, as well as like for other people for other non-Americans to also join us. Yeah,
I imagine it was like pretty disappointing to like sign up and commit yourself along with your team to do this. Mm. And then to find out that you'd have to switch it to like a digital virtual platform. Mm-hmm. How did you and your team kind of overcome that? And then maybe share like one success, like fruit story.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was a lot of processing. I think especially for me as the team leader, like, it was a lot of toll on me, because it's like, how do I, I'm also going through the same things, but I also have to, like, spiritually, emotionally, mentally also, like, be there for my teammates, and, like, how to prep them, as well as, like, how to, like, I'm just, like, mediating, as well as, like, hearing their thoughts and figuring out, making decisions based off those things. And it was very hard. Like, it was a long process for everyone, but I think the thing I liked about our team was, like, everyone was very understanding. Like, we were all going through the same things. We all went through a lot of things. And I know, like, a lot of people had thoughts, but at the same time, like, they knew what was happening. They knew, they understood the reality of the situation we're in, and they still tried to make the most of it, which is what I appreciated. And then that, after, and that took, like, a 3 to 4 month process of kind of, like, really just digesting. And then I think one success story that helped in the sense of, like, us kind of, like, still trying to push and bear fruit is, there's this one girl we met online. She was, like, one of the most shy girls I met. And, like, she would, like, never talk to us. And I'm just like, I don't know how to talk to you over Zoom if you don't talk. Yeah. But, like, she slowly started opening us up to us as, like, because we had office hours as well. Like, so, like, she would come in because she really wanted to learn English. And, like, through those times, like, she would actually start opening up a little bit more, to the point where, like, she started asking spiritual questions. And that was when we kind of realized, oh, maybe we should ask our team to, like, start following up with her more. And after, like, a whole month of when she started asking spiritual questions, she, like, actually accepted Jesus Christ as her personal Lord and Savior. And I think, like, that was, like, the biggest, like, man, this is the realization of, like, man, this is exactly why we all signed up for missions in the first place. Because even though, like, we weren't even in country, even though, like, there's the most shyest girl in our class, the most unsuspecting girl, like, she just devoted her life to Jesus. And, like, I still, like, we still talk to everyone on Facebook nowadays. And she's, like, one of the most devoted Christians that we know. And I think, like, just seeing how, like, God, like, and I think that really shows us, goes to show, like, how God is the one who really does the working in people's lives. We're just kind of, like, the medium to help help with that, as well as just create those environments for him to work, do his work.
That is really special. And I feel like that's something that really does, like, stick with you, right? To know that is the difference that you made.
Definitely.
And the ultimate is them knowing Jesus. So. Yeah. Have you guys ever, just for fun, like, as a team, talked about, hey, like, now that it's open, like, let's get together, go do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've always tried to schedule, like, a post-COVID, like, mission trip when we can. I think the problem is all of us are just so busy. Like, one of my teammates got married. Another one is, like, still moving around. Another one's still working with Epic, locally in Houston. So, like, we've all just, schedules just never aligned. I'm still trying to push for it, even if it's just, like, maybe one or two of us. Just because, like, a lot of them still message us.
Yeah.
They're, like, always saying, when are you coming? And I'm like, I don't know yet. So, yeah, I think we're still trying to push for that, but it's more of a trying to figure out which date works best for all of us.
Yeah. That's also kind of the hard part sometimes about doing missions, at least I found from my personal experience, is that you do build these relationships with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times you do conversate with them, like, on cell phone, and they're just always constantly asking, when are you coming back? And it's always like, oh, I don't know. It's, like, tough.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. But I think that's also the hard aspects of missions, because it's like, you got to find that boundary.
Yeah.
And so otherwise, like, you might not even be able to live your own life, in a sense, back here in the States. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah. And then what are there places that you're, like, particularly passionate about as somebody that does care about missions, like a certain field that you kind of want to enter into?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, like, I think just the Southeast Asia region in general, like, I think after, like, learning more about their history and their culture, like, and just, like, even hearing stories of people going on missions from the States, like, to be honest with you, like, I feel like the Southeast Asia region's always forgotten in a sense. To be honest, because I feel like everyone's always trying to go to, like, China and, like, all these big countries. But, like, for example, like, I think even for me, sometimes I would forget, like, Laos, like, some people don't even know Laos is a country. Like Cambodia, like the trip we just went on. Sometimes even the Philippines, I think. Like just like that peninsula area. Like I think after hearing more and learning more about their history, like I was like, man, like why aren't we sending more Christians over there to like our missionaries to just be able to help them? Because like I think, I mean, even after going to Cambodia, like a lot of people are spiritually open there. Mm-hmm. It's more of like, I think a lot of them just need the just kind of like a spiritual leader to help guide them, to help people understand like, oh, like this is more, because for them, they understand Christianity as a religion, but they don't understand it as like a relationship.
Right.
And I think like they just need that spiritual leader to help them change their mind from a religion to a relationship. And like, there are so many people that I met who are like, kind of like that. And like a lot of people who are on the field, who just, they're like, yeah, we just need more people. Like, because I have like, I met so many people who are like, yeah, I have like 20 disciples. Like I can't handle more. And it really just goes to show like the field is plentiful, but the workers are few.
Yeah. I'm like really touched about like what you just said, because you are saying how like you feel like sometimes like the Southeast part gets forgotten. And that's always what I say about Africa, because I've been going for many years too. Mm. And I always feel the same, especially being part of like an immigrant church where people do focus on the bigger countries. And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, there's like a whole nother area.
Yeah.
And there's so many other people that like need our attention too, you know? So
yeah.
I really particularly personally touched by that part. Kind of going into like just the overall topic of like missions and stuff. I think, you know, we grew up in church, for those that have, of like going to mission trips are a great thing, you know, but I think in recent years, there's kind of been like a stigma about like mission trips and how effective we actually can be.
Mm.
Like, what do you think are some ways that we can counter those stigmas that people have in church about missions? Or why do they even have it? Like, what are we kind of like doing or not doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I've met a lot of people who are like, I don't believe in short-term missions. Mm-hmm. and personally, I kind of agree. But I think the problem or the reality is like, it's just kind of it's just so hard to do as Americans, just because like we all have, you know, full-time jobs here. We all have other priorities here. And like, in order to really give up your time for Jesus and like, and the time for the people of the country you're going to, you really do need to like give it your full time. Otherwise, the effectiveness is what people say is not the best. I mean, I did missions for a year, whole long year, even that year long, like, I don't think it was enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like that's just the reality of it. But I think that's where it comes down to how effective can we be? And I think that's kind of where like, you really do need to learn the context and the culture and like just even the environment of like where you're gonna be to make it the most of your time, because I hear things of like how other missionaries, like they literally just went and came back, they're like, I actually don't know what I learned from that trip. Mm. And I from what I heard is because like they're it's a lack of vision sometimes, and a lack of leadership in a sense, like they didn't go the direction that they wanted to. So I think it really comes down to like a lot of prep work needed to make it the most effective. And I think like there's also the other stigmas of like, you know, people go on missions sometimes and develop mission fever or like mission goggles and like find significant others, but that's just the reality of like people living like literally in proximity to each other, and living every second of that 1-3 week thing. It just naturally happens. But yeah, I think there's a lot of stigmas, but I think those are just some of the things I just wanted to touch on.
How do you think that we as like a church and a community can cultivate people's passions to even be receptive to being part of missions, or to create like a passion within their own hearts for it?
Yeah, definitely. I think like I think with a lot of people's passions, like there's a lot of people in other countries who just really just want to hear the American perspective about it. Mm. And I think that can be a medium to like help build relationship first, and then slowly even start telling your own stories of like, because there's a lot of photographers that I met who are like, oh, like they, of course, they, photography is their passion. So they've, you know, gone on many trips as the photographer, and just a lot of people would always ask about their camera, or like, oh, like those are some nice pictures, like, and whatnot. And then that slowly led them to developing like, oh, these relationships with other people. And then through that, they were able to slowly creep in of like, oh, this is my own story of like how I met Jesus and like why I did photography for Jesus sometimes. Like even that kind of stigma, or that kind of a route is one example. The musical route, like even just, I think there's that aspect of music even of like, oh, like you can, the beautiful thing about music is you don't need words to like be able to express your feelings and whatnot. And I think people can develop a connection through that. There's so many mediums. Like there's also the English way, like teaching English. That's one medium, just being a teacher in general. There's just so many ways that people's passions, it's more of like, I'm more of like, how can you use that to be able to just create a community in a sense? And then once you create a community, like you can, it's the same thing in missions. If you're able to create a community with the same passion, you're all just gonna meet up anyway and do the things that you guys are passionate about. It's more of like, and in those times that you guys are together, you're able to create a space and hopefully a time to be able to, you know, share your own story, share the gospel even. And I think anyone can do it. It's more of creating the community aspect through your passions.
I like that because I think it takes away from like the traditional, like we're going to hold a evangelism, like, you know, meeting. And of course you're going to do all that on a mission trip, but mm-hmm. at least to be able to truly like connect with people through like their hobbies or interests or just who you really are as a person. I think that always makes the best connection.
Definitely.
Yeah. So are you planning to do more trips and stuff in the future for missions or?
Yeah. I think PT has slowly alluded. He's like, maybe if you're more interested. Yeah. I think for me, like, I definitely would love to. I think my passion and my heart for missions will never fade, unless I have other priorities. but currently, like, I want to make the most of my time to be able to serve God and serve people who, you know, haven't heard the gospel yet. So I think I am more than happy to go on as many trips as I can. It's more, the one thing I'm always trying to figure out is like, how do I do it with my full-time job though? Because I have limited PTOs. Of course, the ideal is to either work remotely or like get unlimited PTO job. But I know that's kind of hard for me as a hardware engineer because I literally have to physically be in my labs and whatnot.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of the challenge that people face sometimes, right? Like, even if they want to do it and say they have a family or whatever, you really are competing against PTO time. Yeah. That has to be, like, spread out.
Yeah. Or do it between jobs.
True.
Yeah.
And, like, a leap year or something.
Yeah. Because I know, like, I've always been trying to kind of figure out, because I know people do sabbaticals.
Yeah.
So I'm also trying to figure out, like, how companies kind of figure that out. And, like, because I'd be willing to, again, still take a year off and just be able to, like, do a sabbatical, but not for myself or not for my career, but more for God and Jesus in that aspect as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of to, like, backtrack, like, your passion for missions really came from, like, going out, meeting the people, and then seeing how God was able to, like, change their lives through, like, say, the opportunity of meeting a missionary. And then that's kind of how you want to be able to impact people of the world as well.
Definitely. Yeah. Sorry, was that a question?
No. I just wanted to recap on that.
Got it. Understood. Yeah.
No, it's amazing though, and I think, you know, talking to you, you're like somebody that's like really well rounded. Actually, you do the trips and things, and I think offline we were also talking about the fact that you like to do like home renovations and that you also like to cook. I think that like the more I talk to you, the more I'm like, you're a stellar person. But tell me about like, yeah, when you're not like doing church stuff or missions, not, you know, we kind of talked about the fact that you did band in the past. Currently you're doing like renovations. Tell me where that kind of came from.
Yeah. So my dad is a handyman. I guess like he actually, I guess fun fact about the Tan family is I'm closer to my dad and my brother's closer to my mom.
Okay.
My mom is a software engineer and my dad's was an electrical engineer. I became an electrical engineer. My brother became a software engineer.
Ah.
So you can say nurture versus nature. I say more on the nurture side there. So my dad was a handyman because I was closer to him. He used to be an electrical engineer, but ever since he had John and I, he started becoming handyman because his time is more flexible at that end. So because he started doing handyman stuff, like I just slowly started joining him and learning the trade as well as like just understanding like how to fix things in general. And through that and he would always need a helper, which was me. So through that, like I had to kind of understand like how to do electrical work, how to do plumbing work, how to do woodworking and just a whole, basically whatever broke in people's houses, my dad was the go-to man. And like a lot, actually, a couple people from our church also calls my dad a couple times, but he's slowly moving away from it because he's getting old and retiring and whatnot. So it's kind of funny because he goes, he's slowly retiring. All the old customers are like,
they're calling you now.
They're calling me now. which I know it's a little hard to, I'm also trying to figure it out because it's like, I have my own life too, but it's like to do this, it's hard to say no to them when like, you know, they're old and like have no one else. And it's like, yeah, I just still want to help because, you know, I grew up with them. They grew up with me, or they were there for me too as well. So it's a little bit of giving back in that aspect too. But I think through helping my dad through that, I kind of started to understand and kind of grew a passion, which also helped me to grow a passion into working on cars as well, because it's kind of similar. We also have all the equipment, which is nice.
Yeah.
So it kind of grew into my passion of doing cars.
So you help people with like just like fixing their things. Mm-hmm. Are you building new things or renovating?
I'd say like we try not to do those big things because I think we prefer like other big contractors to do those things. I'd say like building wise, like it's only needed if we have to do it. But I think, we tend, because my dad still has like his, or I still had school and then my dad was also doing his other handyman stuff. Like, so we couldn't take on big projects unless like we were just a helper to other big contractors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned like right now you're kind of passionate about doing cars. Like, what are you working on? Are you doing like restoration work? Are you like, do you have like this golden car that you're like itching to get your hands on to do?
Yeah. Actually, a lot of our people are a lot of the car guys at our church. Like, I'd always joke with them. I need to get.
Do we have a car group community here?
Kind of. Yeah. Kind of. I mean, Alex is one of them. Uh-huh. Nathan Wong. There's. I think Oscar Swen also is into it, but I don't really talk to him as much yet, but I just, I'm more on the scent of like, oh, if it's fixable, like I just want to try giving it a try. So I fixed a lot of cars before, like whether if like, for example, an alternator broke, like I'd replace that. If someone's like, engine had like problems, we try to diagnose it and whatnot. So I've had my fair share of things of working on it, mm-hmm. different cars, but I'd say not as much as the other car guys, people in New Wave.
Yeah. Do you have like a dream of like building a car, like just buying a shell of something and just like making it come to life?
Yeah. So my old college housemate and I, we'd always joke about putting a Tesla, like the battery and all the engine and components into like a big SUV. Mm-hmm. Like we want to make it was in a truck first because we wanted to make the first EV truck out of for fun. We were like trying to part out some stuff, but like we haven't really had the time to like really dive deep into it yet. But we've had a lot of ideas just putting out there.
That is really cool. Do you think you guys are actually gonna try it?
We tried for a good 3 months, mm-hmm. and then after that life just got busy and whatnot, so we haven't really got past. Sourcing stuff like it's all in his house right now, but we haven't really touched it in a while.
Yeah, well, once you guys like start working on it and it's finished, like please let me know.
Yes,
let us know. That would be like a big feat. So
yeah. I mean, there's a lot of YouTubers out there who've done weird things as well, so like, we are like, we should add onto that list, you know.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That'll definitely be like an accomplishment.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then you also mentioned that you like cooking. Like, what are the things that you like to cook?
Yeah, so I actually started cooking since middle school. My mom taught me. Okay, both my parents were busy with work too, so like John and I always be home and hungry, and I'd be like, I'm gonna start cooking for myself, and then that led to cooking for John too, and then started cooking for the rest of the family as well. And I think through that, just always cooking, like I just kind of also developed a passion for it. Cause I'm like, cause it's also part of the understanding the cultural aspects of it. Cause I always like to, my other lifelong dream is to find another, cause I'm actually half Singaporean, half Taiwanese.
Okay.
I've never met another half Singaporean, half Taiwanese other than my brother. So I've always wanted to do that, but that leads me to like, I've learned a lot about my culture as a Singaporean culture and a Taiwanese culture and all its food. So I've always been on passions projects to like just figure out like, oh, how do I recreate it? And like, I can never recreate the authentic, you know, Taiwanese chicken rice or Taiwanese minced pork rice, just because of like the sourcing of ingredients. But I've always wanted to try to recreate it. But yeah, so like, I guess to answer your question, some things I like to cook, like I mentioned, Hainanese chicken rice, Taiwanese minced pork rice, and just like kind of fusing a lot of things. Like sometimes I like to fuse the Singaporean and the Taiwanese and this American as well. So I think those are my top two dishes I like to make though.
Cool. No, I was just about to ask you. I was like, can you do a fusion like version of something that's like Taiwanese and Singaporean together? So the answer is yes.
Yes. It's like more like the spices and like the different like just different ingredients to like kind of fuse it together. I like to just, but it's also, but the more I'm learning about other cultures too, like even the Vietnamese culture has like a Vietnamese version of Taiwanese minced pork rice. So it's like, oh, maybe that's actually more Vietnamese than Taiwanese. So it's also like, as I'm also understanding other people's cultures, it's like, oh, I don't know which one's which sometimes. So it's trying to figure it out sometimes.
Yeah. And then did you learn cooking on your own or did you like learn that through your mom?
I think my mom set the foundation, but through me starting to understand things, I started just like, even my mom's like, what the heck are you making?
Yeah.
So like, I think just through my curiosity, I started to like learn techniques and whatnot. Because I mean, back in the day, YouTube wasn't as a big thing yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Like, you probably had to go back into like true cookbooks or just experimentation.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought of cookbooks as not super helpful. I'm more of the Asian cook where it's like, oh, that's
just throw everything in there.
Yeah. Not like too precise ingredients, but it's more of through taste that I would try to figure things out.
So have you, obviously you've been to Taiwan. Have you been to Singapore?
Yeah, I just came back from Singapore 2 months ago.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. I had a dual citizenship with them, so I wasn't allowed to go back unless I served in the military.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that took a 14-year process. Or I had to wait till I was 21, and it took a 2-year process to file all the paperwork, and then COVID hit. But now I was finally able to go back after 14 years. So.
Wow, what a journey. And what a story.
Did
you eat everything in sight?
Yes, as best as I could. Yeah. I mean, because we're only there for 2 weeks, so I was like, 2 weeks is not enough to eat all the food.
Right.
But like we ate the Singaporean chili crab, the black chili crab, like literally everything you can think of. Went to, like, I think we almost visited every hawker stand in Singapore, because I was just like, yeah, but this is what we're doing.
How fun. Did you bring any spices and things back?
Yeah, my house is filled. Like, I think I fit, because it was me and my dad. I hit all four of our luggages to 50 pounds each. And I was like, yeah, I did this right.
Yeah, you did. And now you're like cooking up a storm every day.
Every week.
Every week, yeah. Are you like, the type that likes to just cook at home and not go out to eat? Or are you like a mix of both?
Yeah, I'd say I'm a mix of both. Because going out is more of like understanding how other people cook and like, low-key taking their techniques and flavors.
Yeah.
But I'm more of cooking at home just because I think, I don't know, especially in our day and age, I feel like it's hard to just have a gathering of people in general. Everyone's just so busy, especially in the Bay Area. And I like to create a medium of like, let's just all gather again. I don't want anyone to spend money. Like, I'm just going to cook and then we're just going to have a great time. And I think like, I mean, people used to do that back in the day. And I'm sure the more on the Southern culture, that's more their aspect too. But I've always wanted to bring that kind of culture back to the Bay in a sense of like, I just want to create an environment and a space for people to come and sit in a circle. Like, honestly, not a lot of tables are circular these days.
True.
And just be able to eat and just fellowship and just talk about life with one another again. So
yeah. No, that's really good. So you mentioned, okay, you do Hainan chicken, you also do minced pork. Those are your two signatures dishes.
Yes.
Is there like a dish you're striving to make right now or like trying to perfect?
I think the one thing I've always wanted to try is like a Chinese burrito. Because like you always hear like sushi burritos or all that. I'm like, let's do the Chinese version of it and just try it out. Like different sizes, different spices, different sauces.
What would you put in a Chinese burrito?
That's what I'm still trying to figure out. Okay. Like, I was like, is it weird to put chow mein in a tortilla? I don't know. Or is it even right to use a tortilla or like a Chinese, like you know, the green onion pancake instead.
Oh, yeah, yum.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Okay, all right. Well, you have to keep us posted on that.
One day, yes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that at the core of like who you are, it feels like you are somebody that like cares about people in general and kind of, and that brings into like the gathering aspect that you were talking about at the end. So I think that's great. And that you do stay curious about so many aspects. And that's why, you know, you're interested in so many things and you have a little touch on it all.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah, it was an honor. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.